want to give everyone an extended version of the Flashback Twin Cities theme song today.
I do love this song. I am so glad that you found this.
If you want to find this, this is on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. But it's also used.
I should turn it back up and just play it for a little bit.
I'm sure there's some people that would prefer that to this, but this is also the Channel 9 news theme for about 3 years, and I don't think they thought anyone would notice.
Hey, I'm not going to say anything if you don't. Is that the plan?
Well, you know, most newscasts had their own pre-produced package, and Channel 9 decided just to use a popular movie, Saturday Night Fever, and then it worked out for them until, that was for a few years, and okay, this is really boring. So it's every Saturday we have this challenge here. We're trying to do our little radio show here, and it seems like the world is against us. We've had the bank robbery incident that half the block was shut down. We've had weather. We've had winter. We had foot of snow. We've had today was the obstacle course of not only road construction but also trees, power lines, random cones and orange flashing lights.
Various streets shut down.
Yep. Yep.
They don't want to let us here.
The state really wants to kill us, I think, is what it's come down to.
Maybe that's an exaggeration. Just a smidge.
You know, it's not only us that had a bad week. You know who else had a bad week?
Who?
George Zimmer. Do you know who George Zimmer is?
Men's Warehouse. Is that correct?
Men's Warehouse. Get it? It's W-E-A-R, Warehouse.
Aha! Very good.
After retailer Men's Warehouse announced that it terminated founder and executive chairman George Zimmer, best known to consumers for its hundreds of TV commercials pitching suits, he fired back saying the company's board has inappropriately chosen to silence my concerns.
This is news to me. I didn't know about any of this.
The company said that in light of Mr. Zimmer's termination, it is postponing its annual shareholders meeting, which has been scheduled for 11 a.m. today in California. This was yesterday. Over the last 40 years, I have built the Men's Warehouse into a multi-billion-dollar company with amazing employees and loyal customers who value the products and service they receive at the Men's Warehouse, Zimmer said in a statement. Over the past several months, I have expressed my concerns to the board about the direction the company is currently heading instead of fostering the kind of dialogue in the boardroom that has, in part, contributed to our success. The board has inappropriately chosen to silence my concerns by terminating me as an executive officer.
Jeez. The only difference that I've noticed from outside looking in is that his voice has just gotten so much deeper in his commercials. It sounds like Batman now.
I get the sense that George might have smoked some cigarettes in his life, but I could be incorrect.
Yeah, that could. I don't know. I think he's just trying hard.
Zimmerman's famous tagline was, "You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it." What I'm trying to find out is what were George's concerns. But I do have, the video I pulled up there. Let's take a listen to that really that gravelly voice of that we can all aspire to be someday.
Once a year, and only once a year, the Men's Warehouse has a sale, and this is it. Save an additional 20 to 40% off the Men's Warehouse everyday low prices. Save on thousands of suits, sport coats, slacks, shirts, ties, and shoes. Save on single and double-breasted wool and wool blend suits and sport coats. It takes a Men's Warehouse sale to beat a Men's Warehouse price. I guarantee it.
I think that sale happens once a week, actually. I think that their annual June, annual July sale.
Our annual bi-weekly sale?
Are they an advertiser of ours?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well,
good call. I should have probably looked that up before we started talking about this.
I've done some I did my research. I do not think that the Men's Warehouse advertises on KLBB radio, which I'm sure we'd welcome that. But
I swear, his voice is now, it just sounds way down deep and gravelly, like he's trying to intimidate you into buying a suit.
Okay, well, here's a personal anecdote. I went to the Men's Warehouse 2 times. Mm-hmm. I was expecting a guy like George to come help me find a suit, and really, you know, but it wasn't quite the case. It was not a great experience, and I'm hoping that was one of his concerns that
he's been trying to pick up and make a little bit better.
I hope so. We have a great show today. Gary Lumpkin, he was the roving reporter on Good Company. Good Company, which a lot of us in the Generation X world remember from coming home after school, and Good Company might have not have been a show that kids my age or our age would have watched, but the best part was Gary Lumpkin and his daily adventures, ranging from rodeo riding to skydiving to jet skiing, shopping around for the best hamburger in town. He did everything. And we have him coming up after this break here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Club 1220. Again, Tom Osmond with Tom Hsu, the master engineer, next room.
Howdy do.
Master engineer. Only engineer, but he's still a master at it.
That's because I'm the best here.
That's right.
I'm the only one here.
Just commenting a little bit about the challenges of getting into the studio today. And Gary, you mentioned you had a few challenges, too, with the road work. And
oh, that's right. Driving in. Yeah, they've decided to do whatever they've decided to do on 36, unfortunately, there aren't many alternates to get to Stillwater, I guess. I could have probably gone via Duluth, and it would have been about the same, but I wasn't smart enough to take that route.
You know, I just leave 2 hours early every week now because I figure if I, you know, whatever happens, within 2 hours, any problem can be resolved. And it's the challenge is telling your guests to come to a 1 o'clock interview 2 hours early is not always the easiest thing to do, but I'm glad everyone made it here in time. So, Gary, this is a great interview for me because I was just talking to Tom here before the next segment here. Watching Good Company as a Generation X kid, you come home from school about 3:30, and Good Company's on. And you know, most of the Good Company show really didn't pertain to grade school kids, except your section, the roving reporter Gary Lumpkin, who would be doing things from. I just watched one last night. You were a rodeo clown. I watched some video of you with, I think the Miss. Miss Minnesota pageant. You were with them at one point.
I never touched her, Your Honor. I was nowhere near that woman at any part. And,
I have no proof of that.
It's the statute of limitations anyway, so go ahead.
But the one I watched, this is one I – it was a 15-minute segment of you checking out every fast food hamburger in town, and they wouldn't let you record in the fast food restaurant, so you actually had to go on the curb and eat the burger outside Burger King on the curb on University Avenue because they wouldn't let you inside the restaurant.
Well, see – there was actually two parts to that story. One was, of course, the information to get the burger information. But I have a certain minimal caloric intake I have to have every day. And this was my sneaky way of getting, basically two burgers or with one stone.
It worked. And this is 12 years of Good Company, right? 12?
Yes, sir.
And you are not from Minnesota. You came from Utah. You were a football coach at the University of Utah, and you ended up in news.
So? It wasn't my fault.
Well, why are you cornering the guest, Tom?
Yes, sir. Wait a minute. No, not the zapper. He's going to zap me, everybody. He's going to zap me for not telling. Yes, okay. Anyway.
you're a prestigious – the University of Utah, you're a prestigious university. And what drew you into TV?
Well, it's kind of a goofy story because I had no training, aptitude, or inclination to do anything in broadcasting.
You fit quite well in this room right now.
There you go. See, it just goes to show you that the cream doesn't always sink to the bottom. But what happened was I was during the game. It's kind of a long story, but during the game, I was up in the booth helping to spot because I was never at the game, at the practices very much during the week. I would be traveling on the road as the recruiting coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You really want to hear this? Okay.
I do.
Well, anyway, so because I wasn't at practice all the time, even though I was the coach, they decided they would want to put one guy on the road recruiting because that was a big deal at Utah. We had a lot of hurdles to overcome to be competitive as recruiting. So I traveled all over the country recruiting for the week. I would meet the team at the game on Saturday, have no idea the game plan or anything. So I would be up in the booth helping to spot. Our booth is right next to the radio guys, and so I would be watching them. So one time they happened to say, hey, ask me a question. Hey, Coach Lumpkin, explain such a da da. Then they started doing it a couple more times, and I really wasn't missed much by the other coaches. So I kind of evolved into helping them on the radio.
Okay.
So then I said, well, gosh, this is fun. The football people don't seem to be missing me very much, and I'm kind of liking this. If radio is this much fun, kind of like the fun we're having right now, he just nodded off there, folks. But I'll try to speak a little softer.
Wake up.
And So I said, I wonder how fun TV would be. And kind of made some inquiries. And they said, the TV, local TV station said, yeah, we've heard you on the radio. And even then, even without the saying any more about that, well, if you want to come and do a little. They offered me a job. They didn't have any sports jobs, but they offered me a job as a stringer.
Okay.
And I said, great, part-time job as a stringer. I'll take it. And then I left the room and had to go ask somebody what a stringer was. True story. And so I found out what that was, and it just sort of meant like a jack of all trades and just kind of filling in stories on a catch-as-catch-can.
And did they put you on payroll? Or did they
paid me by the story.
Okay.
$30 a story.
Okay.
And then the story started to seemed to work out. They offered me a full-time job in sports. And as a feature reporter, not sports. So I became a full time feature reporter. And
was this the birth of some of the
thing led to another, and I ended up in Minnesota.
To our audience here, Gary was generous and gave me his library of tapes, which are slowly going to be popping on tcmedianow.com, little by little. Here, you gave me a bunch of tapes from Utah, which I've not gone through yet, but I'm guessing when I go through those, and we'll have you on for part two and part three at some point, this is going to be this is the birth of the roving reporter days. This is finding the unique story in a what could be a very boring, mundane situation. What's that story out there that's actually really interesting, and getting in there and finding that TV
the hook.
Thank you. Yes,
I'm here for you.
Say that again.
This was the start of the finding that. Help me out here, Tom.
How do you find that hook that just grabs
exactly
the attention of the audience?
I don't know. I have no idea. I wish I had a clever, insightful answer to that question. I guess if it interested me and I thought if I could tell the story, I really did think of myself as a storyteller. And sometimes it worked. Sometimes it was very sophomoric and humor-wise, and it didn't work as well. Obviously, they weren't all home runs by any means. But sometimes they did work, and sometimes the subject matter just get out of the way of it. Other times you had to really torture it and twist it and kind of make something out of it. It's all facets of that, and I kind of got really lucky in that this feature reporter thing evolved into what it did, because sports would have been so much more limiting. I still always did all the sports I ever wanted to do, from just covering it to participating, which kind of became the niche rather at Good Company. Was getting involved in something. Don't just go to the rodeo, get on the doggone bull,
right?
You know, and so forth. In fact, one of the first really participatory stories I did was out at the rodeo in Hudson. The world's toughest rodeo was out there, and I got on the bull, was off in a second, 2 seconds, landed on my butt, and didn't get hurt and anything, and kind of woke up the next morning with blood in my urine.
Oh, dear.
Now, I had been working at Good Company about 3 weeks, so I was under the 30-day your insurance kicks in period. So I had no insurance, and here I'm thinking dialysis, kidney transplant, all kinds of horrible things. I actually called the team football doctor back in Utah, told him what happened, and he said, well, give yourself another 24 hours. Blood in the urine really is not that uncommon. Athletes have it all the time, which I knew, I guess.
Right.
But anyway, so it was almost a very short career, it was kind of a sign of times, things to come.
They had to have kept a high insurance policy on you when you were. Especially when I'm watching the skateboard ramp video. He's on the skateboard ramp, which is actually like two buildings that there's no flat space to it. You can't stand flat on it.
Yep.
When you talk to the Steve or Sharon and say, hey, here's what I'm going to do today. Were these your ideas or their ideas?
No, they made me do that under penalty of severe. No, they never knew. They never knew what I was going to do. They never knew, and they just kind of accepted my judgment, I guess, as for want of a better out. And yeah, they pretty much let me do what I wanted to do. That was. I had a pretty good gig in a lot of ways, and the creative freedom was perhaps the biggest plus. Obviously, it was great fun. I got to travel. I got to meet people and all that kind of stuff. But to But to have nobody really breathing down my neck about content or style or any of that stuff, they just kind of let me alone. And maybe I earned that, I guess. But still, they could have, if they wanted to, have been more controlling. Mm-hmm. And they chose not to do that. And it worked out. It worked out good for everybody.
Well, if you're only making $30 a story, and you can only have so many stories in a night, I mean, how did you keep yourself from just having a lot of filler, just you didn't even work hard to make it happen, make it right?
Well, that $30 a story luckily only lasted for about a month in Utah.
Oh,
and then I went from that $30 a story stringer to a full-time job there.
So every time you did a story, you made it as good as possible, and that must be why they give you the freedom. Because apparently you didn't screw up.
Well, not doing that. There's some that I look back on, and I'm going to be really interested in seeing the tapes I gave Tom, the box of tapes and stuff like that, several boxes, have not seen the light of day for a long time. And I know that when I finally get to see those after all these years, I'm going to cringe because they're going to be pretty crummy. But
you know, hey, it's all part of the growth and evolution of us as human beings,
well,
right?
Well, there you go. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I'm trying to keep this intellectual integrity up here. Let's talk a little bit about you're doing sports, you're doing feature reporting in Utah. Did you have like a stack of videotapes you sent out to all these different cities? And how did Good Company bite? How did the move from Utah to Minnesota happen?
At that time, there was a show that was a national show with local versions of it called PM Magazine.
Right, right.
And there were PM Magazines all over the country. There was one right there in Salt Lake City, and mm-hmm. there was one here in the Twin Cities. I thought that would be a good show for me. So in a national, the broadcast magazine is a weekly publication in the industry. There would be in the back of the magazine the want ads of jobs open, and I kept looking for PM Magazine openings all over the country.
And PM Magazine was a franchise show. That was a show that it was I think Group W owned it, and they had local hosts, and they'd have national packages mixing with local
yep.
local pieces, right?
Yeah, if you were local, you'd do a story about your town and your market, but then you'd send it out, and any of the other PM Magazines could air it if they wanted
right.
to. And it was a pretty good concept of sharing material. So that's what I thought. If I could ever get a PM Magazine show, that would really be a good gig. Well, in the process, I sent out some tapes and resumes and stuff like that. And there was this show in Minnesota, a new afternoon talk show, looking for a feature reporter. So I applied for that, sent them a tape. They flew me back here for an interview. And in the process of that, show hadn't even gone on the air yet. They sent me out with a camera crew to do a story just to see how I worked in the field. Nothing like I would ever do, okay? Nothing like the tapes I had sent them. I went to the unemployment office, okay, and sat around in this big room with all these people waiting for their number to come up so they could talk to the clerk there, and it was just dreadful.
This is what they had you come here and do a story on the unemployment office in Minnesota? That was your test?
That was my test story.
Well, and this is 1982 during the height of the recession, so this had been a really, really uplifting, cheerful moment for you.
Yeah. I said, I'm not sure I want this job even if they offer it, and this is, but Stephen Charon already had a name in the market from having been on earlier in a morning show. They had left, and now we're coming back to start a new afternoon show. So I figured, well, this is dead. I couldn't possibly. Plus the fact, I remember when I came in, I can remember the dates because it was easy to remember. It was April 15th, tax day, of course, and I flew in and there was 15 inches of snow. So the 15s are easy to remember. And I'm thinking, I hope they don't offer me a job because who would live in a place like this? And I now know that that's very rare. It's usually 15 inches in May.
Right, or June. I was going to say,
yeah.
this year would have been 15 inches in June.
Exactly. So,
had you ever been to Minnesota before? Have you ever?
No. I knew pretty much where Minnesota was on a map.
Right.
Okay, but within that basic rectangle of Minnesota, I didn't know where the Twin Cities were. It could have been in the middle of the state. It could have been it could have been up on the Canadian border. It could have been anywhere. As it turns out, it's kind of close to Iowa.
Mary Richards had worked here and worked out well for her.
But I couldn't throw a Tam Shanter hat in the air like that. So I have, I didn't have that skill.
Your statue's yet to come. It'll be on University Avenue, the microphone. You and right there in the Hubbard, by the Hubbard building there.
Yeah. that'll be
well. Well, you know, dream, right? So you did this really depressing story about unemployment. I guess Gary
Lumpkin. And they hired me anyway. So they hired me anyway, and then I had...
You must have made it a fun event. Did you go in there and say, hey, it's Gary Lumpkin, and put the microphone in people's faces
and
say,
no idea.
How's the unemployment going for you?
It's all just an ugly memory, and I have no idea what I said, what I did. And
well, I'm going to find the tape now. I want to hope that tape is in the box there, because that's going to be featured on the website.
We can do a little critique of it.
A little critique of it.
Yeah, it's my audition tape. But that's what it was. It was had no semblance on anything I ever did again, and yet that's what they chose to have me do.
Gary Lumpkin, my guest today. Tom, play the video I put up. This is the iconic Good Company theme song, and you're happening to be hosting this particular event at Good Company.
ETV, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Channel 5.
Hi there, I'm Gary Lumpkin.
And I'm Bob Bruce, and today on Good Company, I'll be cooking up a special Italian dish with Mama D.
And we'll meet the new 1983 Mrs. Minnesota, Judy List.
And Gary will be talking with Tom Petty, a big rock star.
And on our Minnesota getaway, we'll travel to the historic town of Hinckley, Minnesota.
It's all coming up next on Good Company.
Stay tuned.
From the Twin Cities, it's Good Company.
Now, I hope the folks continue to keep listening and not run for their computers right now to pull that thing up, because when they get there, the hairstyles, I don't think there's that much hairspray. Yeah, hairspray left in the Twin Cities.
I think between you and Bob, there had to have been at least two aerosol cans.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, did you have to use like the face mask when you sprayed the spray on there before the show started?
I don't know. I'm pleading the fifth. I don't even know that was really me.
I think people are going there not only for the hairstyles but the sport coats. I mean, the sport coats. Yours is a little more conservative than Bob. Bob has the mint green sport coat. Not that one, but the one we were watching before.
Have a single hair out of place. That's amazing.
Still, even today, well, that's because I don't have any hair. Maybe that's a. But yeah, it's just.
Tom, play that. Keep playing that. Actually, there's some audio here while I'm here.
Fine. Anyway, I guess we should mention where Steve and Sharon are. They're in Los Angeles working on a story. And is it true? They told me that they're attending a party tonight for Joan Collins of Dynasty.
The one that may have fried last night. We don't know that yet, do we? I didn't get a chance to see it, but I heard some people talking about it before the show. I missed the episode last night. But anyway, that's right. They're at a party with Joan Collins tonight, and they'll have that and a number of other treats, including behind the scenes of the Battle of the Network Stars and some fun stuff from this couple-day trip in California.
I caught a little bit of Dynasty last night. It was certainly more interesting than the third period of the North Star game.
Well, what happened, by the way?
I don't know, and Lou Nanny doesn't know, and it's really people have to be concerned.
Okay, now we're getting into that's old news now.
Back in the past, the North Stars, there was a hockey team, folks. It used to be here.
There was a hockey team that 20 years ago went to a different state. I can't remember which one. Was it?
They broke my heart.
Yeah, that Norm Green or Lauren Green or what his name was.
That's it.
Yeah. So 12 years of Good Company and 12 years of putting your body through torture and putting yourself out there. Tell me this. What was the – were you scared when you were doing these stunts? Were you really scared? You didn't look scared even when you fell down, even when you were
– Well, I wasn't that I was all that brave. I just – I don't think I had a real sense of Well, you know, it's always the other guy that gets hurt, you know, I guess.
Right.
I kind of thought about that from time to time. I thought I got scared afterwards. I talked about that bull ride, one of my first stories, when I landed on my butt. In the video, I never realized it, but I landed on my seat and kind of just rolled over to the side to try to get up very quickly. When I watched the video, I hit and I rolled, and where I was sitting, where I had landed, a split second later, the bull's back legs came down. On that exact spot. Now, I was just dumb luck that I happened to hit and roll and get out of the way. I wasn't thinking about the bull. I was just, oops, I'm up. I better get up. You know, I don't want to look foolish. Very concerned about my image, of course, you know.
Right, of course.
Yeah, have to look good at all times, even when you fall on your face or other parts of your body. But the point is, that could have been came within literally less than a split second or less than a second of something pretty ugly happening, but the bull missed me and I got up and carried on. That's kind of got my attention afterwards, but it really wasn't enough to to make any difference, because about 4 years later I rode a bull again. Similar results. I didn't have blood in the urine afterwards, but I was my total time on the bull was about the same. So I'm a slow learner.
When's the last time you rode a bull?
That was it.
Okay.
I did it twice. I did ride a buffalo once.
You rode a buffalo?
Yeah, rode the buffalo at a rodeo. So no bulls. How about a buffalo? Oh, sure.
Sure.
So
way better.
So there's no saddle, no bridle, but you know, you got all that big mane. Mm-hmm. So you just grab onto that.
They don't seem like a very friendly creature.
They're not.
They
but
are
pretty
until they gore you.
Every animal's friendly until it talks to you or until it meets you. Yeah.
That's they said you don't have to worry about the animal stomping on you because they're not vicious or anything like that. Just be aware of the horns. And I said, well, yeah, no problem. So of course, what happened was I rode the bull, and somehow as I was bucking along, was going more and more forward. Mm-hmm. So that eventually the bull sort of slowed down quickly, and I went over the front of the bull. Now the bull didn't continue on; he stopped and went around me. But in getting up, I realized as I picked myself up, my shirt, the front of my shirt was totally ripped open. So the front of my shirt had caught on the horn of the bull as I was going across the top of his horns. And I went, oh, wow, look at this. How about that, everybody? And they went, yeah, how about that, you goofus? And it impressed my daughter, was about five or six at the time. So when I came home that night, because they were watching the show, there was a note for me on the door. It says, Daddy, no more riding wild buffaloes.
And you've kept that promise ever since.
I have. I did not get on a wild buffalo ever again.
Did you ever spend some time in the hospital after doing one of these events?
I had one knee surgery from a skiing accident where I just kind of wasn't doing anything really exotic or anything, just kind of doing some things on moguls, and kind of went down, and my knee went, ooh, that's not good. And so I ended up tearing some cartilage in my knee and head. But, hey, we made a story out of that. We took a camera into the operating room and watched the guy do orthoscopic. What's the little where he goes with them? Just a microscope. Yeah, orthoscope. Anyway, they don't cut you wide open, but they go in with these little bitty holes with a microscope. And
all your medical expenses became business expenses. Look at that.
You just found a way to
write all that off. That's great.
Well, earlier I forgot the comment. You asked something about did they ever kind of control you. Our insurance guy did have a conversation once with Edelman about, do you really need this guy doing this stuff? I mean, I'm not sure, if something really catastrophic happens that he's covered. And Edelman says, hey, just, he needs to do what he does, and he's going to be okay.
As long as the camera's on me, nothing bad can happen, right?
I suppose.
You got to be curious, though. I mean, you say that you were kind of aware after the bull nearly, smashed you in. But did you ever have just like that wake-up call, like, oh, my gosh, I could really, really hurt myself?
Well, that's about as close as I came.
That's the closest?
Yeah, it was close. There were some other ones. I remember Steve telling me after the fact, I did a demolition derby story out at Shakopee. And, of course, that's kind of a rough and tumble event. But it's, but the guy who owned the track, I just went blank on his name, Tom. Anyway, it starts with an O. But the point is, he later made a point of calling up Edelman and saying, you might want to have that guy looked over. And Steve said, what do you mean? He says, well, he did some things out there on the track. He took some chances that he really didn't need to take. I don't think he's quite right.
Now, how about it is when a demolition derby guy is telling you, this guy might be a little bit crazy for us here.
Well, yeah.
Here's a little audio clip here. This is one of the most dangerous stories I think you ever did. Let's play this audio, Tom.
Welcome back. I know many of you out there take part in aerobic dancing, and you probably think that this is really the newest thing and just came about. Well, that is not true. Actually,
it
started a long time ago, and it was called clogging, of all things. Our field host recently took a lesson in the art of clogging. Here's Kerry Lumpkin. He has more on all you cloggers out there.
I'm on my way to the Homestead Picking Parlor. Now, it's in Richfield, and most of the time, it's an ordinary enough music store.
Good, great store.
Every so often, it's a place to take dancing lessons. It's called clogging, and although I'm not much of a dancer, I've always been fascinated by this particular dance style. Now, I found out later, most of the people in the class had never clogged before either, and yet they picked up the basic step very quickly, and once they had that, they were ready for music.
Now, of course, this is radio, but you can just imagine the grace, the subtle qualities I'm bringing to this.
These really are beginners mostly, and at this point, they've learned only two or three steps. Before the class is over, they'll learn eight different routines, as well as a few variations on each. Now, I have to admit, my initial efforts were not quite as successful.
I'm being modest. I was actually pretty damn good. Excuse me, I can't say
we're learning a style found in the Appalachian region of the United States, and although it's considered an American dance, its roots are elsewhere.
Gary, everyone was walking, was clogging like Herman Munster compared to you. I mean, look.
It was. It was kind of embarrassing, you know, and I actually had to kind of rein it back in just a little bit.
First of all, you've talked about the clothing and the style. Imagine this. I mean, this is on tcmedia.com. The style of the cloggers. That there you go. That was they were dressed what you'd assume cloggers would be wearing.
I had an ex who clogged, and it was a little odd to watch. A little odd. It's still impressive though.
Well, I went along because I was such a darn good sport for those kinds of things. And basically, I've always considered myself a snappy dresser, and sometimes I had to kind of, like I say, dial it back a little bit.
Yeah, one of you TV guys coming to our clogging studio, you and your automobiles and your $50 haircuts.
I've only known you for about 50 minutes now, and I can't see you dialing anything back. Just going to put that out there.
Well, my nose is growing just like Pinocchio's, too, so you have to kind of remember that.
This is Good Company was a very popular show, but for some reason they decided to end it in 1994. The Hubbard family decided that they could make more money with George Hamilton at 3 o'clock than Good Company, which was unfortunate for all of us because it was kind of like a part of our childhood was gone once Good Company went away. You always kind of counted on it. This clip I want to play here is from the last episode of Good Company, last program. This is you and Stephen Sharon kind of talking a little bit about some of the highlights of the last 12 years.
Anyway, so the rodeo was kind of the kickoff, and it seems to me that would be a good place to start.
Let's do it.
The rodeo.
That first story.
The rodeo.
Yes, the rodeo. Very risky because when you deal with animals, the unexpected can always happen. Like when I tried steer wrestling. I mean, I was so intent on the horns, I forgot all about other parts of the animal, and so the steer stomps on me about 3 times. And so then, having not realized just how lucky I'd been, I pushed things too far when I tried clown bullfighting.
Hey, here it is.
I'm in one of those big barrels.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And the bull's trying to hook his horns on the inside. He's trying to get inside the barrel and get me. He's a man-eating bull.
Yeah, I had him.
Now, here's another risky moment involving an animal. While scuba diving off the coast of Mexico, I tried to hand-feed a moray eel. And it worked. The eel, very cautiously to be sure, responded to the lure and snatched the food several times, swallowing it whole. And then, a bit later, he came way out, went for the fish, and I went for the moray. I hadn't really planned to do it, but now, as Jane watched on, I was holding an angry 3-foot moray eel barehanded.
And no idea what to do with it.
And as long as we're talking about animals, here's what happened when I wrestled an alligator in Florida.
Okay, the idea... Oh, God, the breath. Okay.
I'm sitting on the back of this alligator, bending its head back.
Like this. Hold it with your chin. And let your hands go.
That's what's done.
Like that.
So if you can visualize an alligator with its head bent straight back.
And here's a story involving
me sitting out like a cowboy holding his head with my chin.
I wrestled with in the waters off Cancun, Mexico. But finally, I grabbed one by the tail, hoping it would pull me along
and 8-foot
not
shark.
Whip around and do something else. It didn't, and so I got even braver. Don't ask me why.
I think the Jaws music was a good touch.
This is absurd. Who does this?
This guy does.
Now, of course, I don't need animals to get myself in trouble. Skateboards do just fine and gave me some of my most exciting times and most pain.
Like, for sure, man. Totally, totally radical or something.
You get the lingo down.
Lean forward and...
Totally stupid. This one I actually saw stars.
Now I'm not to do that.
Oh, yeah, that was so much fun. I did it again 1 year later.
Yeah.
Nothing to it. You just go over the edge and go down. Dropping off.
Yeah, right on my head.
Well, the helmet helped.
Well, not much.
We'll have more Good Company.
I could barely talk. That was live.
Well, let me tell you, I was lying through my teeth right there because I was hurt. My head had slammed into the floor. Luckily, I wore the helmet.
Yeah.
That now, one. Here it is again. And watch my head bounce off the ramp right there. Well, after that, I never got on a skateboard again.
Yeah, I learned.
The moral of the story is...
don't ride the wild buffalo and don't get on a skateboard.
I like the taking the shark's tail and just kind of, you know, just swimming with the sharks. That you I think you've made a plot for every Discovery Channel TV show that's on right now, because I think we have a show on alligator wrestling and a show on, you know, shark hunting, and every show that's now currently making tons of money. You should get on these guys and take some of the credit for these shows.
I should get a writer's credit, residuals or something.
I think so. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have even more Gary Lumpkin Good Company audio. We'll talk a little bit more about the some days of Good Company and that unfortunate day in 1994 when it went away on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest Gary Lumpkin of KSDP's Good Company and media and voiceover work, acting, real estate. What else are you doing, Gary? What else have you been up to since Good Company folded away?
Pretty much just taking up space and being a drain on society at this point. I have kind of no purpose, and I just kind of look around. And yeah.
So you never left media then, they're saying. You've been on media the whole time.
I do have a real estate license. It's been a little slow in that area, but I've been keeping fairly busy. I got a few other irons in the fire and some entrepreneurial stuff, but a real mixed bag of things. In fact, one of my oldest daughters about 6 months ago said, "You know, Dad, you really have too much free time. You need to get your fanny." I'm not sure that's exactly the word she used. But she's the oldest, so she's allowed to say what she says. And go back into teaching. Before I got into TV, in addition to being a football coach, I was actually a high school math teacher. And I went back to school at one point and got a master's. And at that time, I did substitute teaching. So anyway, so she's heard all those stories. He said, you know, go back and teach it, or just go be a substitute. You know, you like it, you're good at it. So I said, oh, well, okay. So I started doing the paperwork, and luckily my transcripts and credentials were all still good. So I substitute as a substitute teacher for the last 3 months in the St. Paul schools.
Oh, great.
And I'll probably do it again. So that's kind of fun.
Well, you can take your Good Company hosting skills, bring to the classroom, get people excited about science or math. Now, as a substitute teacher, you're teaching everything from FIAD to math to science, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I could theoretically be anything. The credential that they gave me as a substitute is pre-K,
okay,
the littlest ones, up to adult, and I'm not sure what that means, and all subjects. So when the jobs come open, it's all computerized and it's pretty slick. On any particular day, the jobs available for the next day are posted until somebody grabs them. So I never went on an elementary school job, because I just couldn't do that.
But you've had four kids. You know what you're up against. You know when you go when you go to a room with some preteens, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but the little ones, yeah, I couldn't. You're right. Hey, you got to know, as a substitute teacher, when you show up in class, you can't necessarily see it, but the kids can. There's a big bullseye.
Oh, right
in the middle of your forehead, and you are a target for anything that they can think of that they could never pull on their regular teacher that they think they can get away with you.
Now, when you were a student, you would have never dreamed of that kind of thing, right? When you were a student in school and a substitute teacher came in, never used that to your advantage?
Well, you can imagine where this is going to go. I can remember my eighth grade math, my junior high math teacher, Mr. Toogood. Back in California.
Great name.
Yes, indeed. And he looked at me and he said, "Lumpkin, because I was a pretty smart kid, but I was also a smart aleck. And he said, Lumpkin, one of these days you're going to discover that natural intelligence, your native ability to get things right, is going to fail you. And this, all this screwing around you're doing, it's going to bite you in the... And anyway, so the story went on from there. Well, my friends that I have continued to know, all these have reminded me of that story a number of times over the years. Lumpkin, your native intelligence again. So anyway, yeah, I was a good student, but I did not get good marks in self-conduct and control. And yes, it's full circle now.
Do we need to send Mr. Toogood some DVDs of all this great stuff that we did? Because we'll show him.
Yeah. It'd probably be a long distance call. I would imagine he's at that great elementary school or junior high in the sky. But then again, who knows? Maybe not. His words were prophetic. And everything that these guys. Although I got to tell you, the kids now are a little rougher around the edges. We were perhaps. Jerks, but we were not obscene jerks.
You were scamps.
We were maybe.
Well, you know, kids now have technology to aid them in their shenanigans now. I mean, now they can probably, you know, send a mass tweet or text out to everyone and coordinate things. You actually had to do things with your paper and it's 4 minutes between classes to do any kind of planned.
Bullying took work back then.
Yeah, bullying took work back then. We didn't need legislation against bullying because everything, you know, it was too tough to bully anyway.
It's it. It's now, and you talk about texting and tweeting. If you turn your back for more than 30 seconds, and then when you look back, 14 of them have got their thumbs working like crazy with some kind of electronic device.
They're studying.
It's unbelievable.
They're studying. They're reading a book online.
The addictive quality of that is unbelievable.
I was talking to a chiropractor, and she was saying actually people come in for thumbs. They have like tweet thumbs.
They must.
Instant message thumbs. I guess that's a thing now.
Carpal tunnel thumbs.
Tunnel thumbs.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Let's, my guest Gary Lumpkin, let's talk about 1994. Did you see the end of Good Company? Did you see it happening, or just kind of happened?
Had no clue. I think we had about a 45, maybe 60 day window of when we were told it was going to happen, and then it happened. So we I guess we went off the air right about June 1st, or thereabouts, and
because the show was making money and it was highly rated, so it was a little bit of a surprise, I think, to people in the industry.
Yeah,
went away.
I don't know though. I don't really know the whole story. Probably if I did, I'd probably have to kind of fib or something. But I actually don't know. But I do know that we were making a lot of money, mm-hmm. but I know we were also spending a lot of money. We were a very expensive show. We had a big staff. We had a budget for traveling, although we got a lot of that traded out. You know, the old thing at the end of the show, transportation provided by
Republic Airlines.
Your medical fees, of course.
Exactly.
Well, your medical fees alone probably were a good budget portion.
Well, I had a lot of Band-Aids that they had to go through several boxes of Johnson & Johnson Band-Aids. But the bottom line, I don't know what it was, but anyway, after 12 years, although I will say this, it was a great show, and the Hubbard family was super good to us. And at a function a couple of years ago, I went to. It was actually the induction of Steve and Sharon into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
Right.
And Mr. Hubbard introduced them to the thing, saying the nice words about them as being induced and everything. Inducted
Louis Anderson did too. He was there. He was the host that night. I was there.
Yep. Right. And in his remarks, Mr. Hubbard said, and you notice I still call him Mr. Hubbard because he just might have a spot for me, and I have to make sure. No, anyway, but he was really his family, and he was great to us. But he made the remark that we let Good Company, we canceled Good Company, or we brought it to an end. Probably one of the biggest mistakes in broadcasting I've ever made.
Right.
So we all, of course, immediately perked up in our chairs and hit each other in the rib. Did you hear that? Did you hear what he said? Did you hear it?
And I'm bringing it back next week. Everyone show up to work on Monday morning.
Yeah. And so it was nice to hear that for him to say that. And I bet he probably meant it. There was probably some second guessing on his part. But nevertheless, you got to know. You got to know when you're in broadcasting, TV-wise, and your gig here and the gig down the street and the gig around town. Sooner or later, it's going to come to an end.
Right.
It's just, there aren't very many Tonight shows with Johnny Carson.
No.
Or 60 Minutes with, well, those people change. You know, I'm saying they're even
well,
though
they change by death, unfortunately. They don't change by retirement.
Exactly. But, yeah, so there's just sooner or later, it's going to end, usually sooner than later.
Well, now the taste and trends change so much now. I mean, the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson, probably wouldn't have lasted 30 years if it was to start the same kind of show today.
Maybe not.
30 years from now. Maybe not. Maybe it would. But I think that the more technology, the more channels we have, the more, you know, you talk about satellite radio, terrestrial radio, HD radio, there's so many, you know, the niches are so specific that in order for a show to be a general show for a wide audience, it's really tough. And I think that you're not going to see shows lasting for 10 years, 12 years like Good Company did.
Well, I suppose that's true, although I got to say this about Steve, is that he was not only the co-host, but he was the executive producer, and they would meet. One of the nice things about my job is that I never had to go to those meetings. Once again, that's part of leaving me alone. But they would meet every day about not only the show coming up, but shows in the future and stuff like that. And if you would look at the content of the first month of Good Company and then look at the content of the show at the end, it was a totally different show. It had evolved, and he was really good at keeping it current and finding new segments. And you know, I mean, cooking. We had a pretty significant female demographic at that time of the day, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just cooking and fashion and stuff like that. And even if we had those, he kept him current and fresh.
And Steve Edelman, who we're talking about, he had a great passion for that show. He was not just the host. He was the writer, the producer, executive producer. I mean, that was everything about him and Sharon was that show.
Yeah. It was his deal, and Sharon, they fit together very perfectly, both on and off camera. She had she contributed a lot too, that more than just as a host and so forth. But yeah, no question about it. He knew what he was doing, and he had a reason for doing what he did. He didn't make very many mistakes, and he was thinking forward. And he would drive people nuts because he was, you know, very demanding and stuff like that. But it was all good stuff. It was all for the betterment of the show.
Well, you create a quality product. You're creating a product every single day. I mean, sometimes we laugh about putting on an hour show a week, and you're putting an hour of TV a day with how many different segments, guests, an audience. You look at, you know, we were looking at some clips before. You got Jay Leno, you got Tom Petty, you have cooking segments, you got to get all the ingredients right. There's a lot of coordination has to happen in an hour of TV.
Well, the word got out in the PR circles and the marketing people of this show in the Twin Cities, and they made a point of making sure that the Twin Cities was on their circle of when they would send people around the country marketing their TV show,
right,
their book,
right,
their whatever they were peddling, because they were selling. Somebody was selling something on every segment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but we became a point. You have to go. Yeah, you got to go to L.A. You got to go to New York. You got to go to Chicago. But you got to go to the Twin Cities, and you got to get on this Good Company ABC affiliate show because it's really good, and they deliver an audience, and it'll pay off.
And it did for a lot of people.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we had no trouble. We had no trouble booking. If a celebrity came to town, they were on our show. And if they didn't, they would be happy to be on it if we figured out a way to get them there.
One of the best videos that I've looked at so far is Louis Anderson on his way to L.A. You had a pretty long interview with him at the comedy club here in Minneapolis. I can't remember the name of it. But Louis, which people may know now from the diving show, but before he went to L.A. and made it big as a stand-up in L.A., nationally, you were just hanging with him here in Minneapolis and talking about his journey to as a
yep.
Local St. Paul guy, and he hadn't been in comedy that long when you talked to him.
No, he was well-known in the Twin Cities, but this, again, was pretty new in our time in the Twin Cities. And so they said, hey, there's this comedian. He's talking about moving to L.A. Go do a story on him. And so I went down to the Dudley Riggs, one of the Dudley Riggs facilities, and interviewed Louis. And I had never seen him perform and stuff like that. But I got to know him through the interview, and then we taped some of his stand-up. And of course, he went on to be huge,
and,
so to speak.
And, well, literally, we'll leave that one alone. Gary, thank you so much. We'll be back next week with Barry Zavan inducted into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
That's it? No more? What are you talking about? I'm just getting warmed up. I haven't even told you the story about the duck and the chicken.
There is a 5-volume of this show. We're going to cut you back quarterly.
I set myself on fire once. Did you hear about that?
Blast with Twin Cities on KLEB Club 1220.
I guess I'm done.